Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, before we begin, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find them on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to take this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Nick S., Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, Coach J-Ro, Geek Beardly, and Scoop Face for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. And you can go get your very own MTG in Quarantine branded playmat over at Inked Gaming. That is INKEDGaming.com. Got two awesome versions to pick from, both the full color logo as well as the grayscale version. They both look amazing, and you're going to want to go pick up one for you and all of your friends. So yeah, again, that is Inked Gaming. That's INKEDGaming.com. Go search MTG in Quarantine. Every purchase helps support the show and is greatly appreciated. So, about 2 years ago, I started the MTG in Quarantine podcast. I can't believe it's already been 2 full years. I mean, it feels like just yesterday in a way that I was just doing the 1 year anniversary episode. So it's crazy that now we're here right at the 2 year anniversary. And obviously, because we're there, I had to do the second or the 2 year anniversary episode here. So yeah, welcome to that. And a couple of weeks ago, I put out a feeler on Twitter to ask my friends, to ask members of the community what I should talk about on this particular episode, and the answer was clear, kind of in a two-phase way, is that the first one was to talk a little bit about how I have changed, my deck building has changed over the last 2 years since I started the podcast, as well as to talk about some of the favorite decks that I have built, or decks that have kind of come and gone in the last 2 years. So I'm going to actually touch on both of those. So I'm going to first get started here with how I've changed as a builder and as a Magic player over the last 2 years. So when I was first starting the podcast, I was still fairly new to Magic the Gathering. I've been playing for, a little bit over a year. And, I was still trying to learn a lot of the nuances about the, EDH, about Magic in general. Obviously, I wasn't that far removed from my very first time playing EDH with my, if you've been listening to the show here a long time, you know that I first started with Glissa the Traitor as my very first commander. Now, the deck was not very good. Obviously, it was running a lot of cards that I pulled in booster packs, or, a lot of commons, uncommons, with very few synergies, especially with the commander. I wasn't running a whole lot of artifacts. Glissa was kind of just there, mostly as a 3-3 death touch first striker. I really didn't have much direction for that deck at the time. And over the course of that first year, I was still kind of struggling to figure out exactly where I wanted to be as a brewer. I ran through several different decks that didn't exactly work out as intended. I took a lot of, I took a beating in a lot of games, honestly. I didn't really ever win, and I really wasn't quite sure exactly where I wanted to go with my deck building. I could have gone in a million different directions. I really didn't have a whole lot of thoughts going anywhere. Just trying to take my lumps as I was figuring out how to play this Magic the Gathering thing. Because again, I was very new to it and trying to get back into card games for the first time in 15 years, really. But it was also another challenge. So I was just trying to really figure my way through. So by the time I started the podcast in June 2020, I was still just trying to figure out exactly where I was going with all of this. And now that I look back on that 2 years ago, I can definitely see that everything really was for a reason in that process. I had to take those lumps because I had to realize what and what doesn't really work. But also in EDH, which, a lot of people talk about what works and what doesn't work in EDH, but I think you also forget the agency role of how you as the player really go into that. Because obviously, the way I built decks 2 years ago was not very good. I built some very, very weird decks that didn't exactly do the thing I wanted them to do, and that really hurt me. I'm not going to lie, is they didn't really have the synergies I needed to really do quote-unquote the thing, right? And I definitely learned some lessons in that process that I'm still reaping the benefits of now. And I think now that I look back on it 2 years later again, is that yes, while I was taking my lumps at the time, I was also developing that sense of who I am right now as a brewer. Obviously, all of you who are listening out there who've been listening for a long time know that I love building extremely weird decks. I love building kind of strange thematic decks that, you know, they don't necessarily come out and just try to punch up to their weight class right out of the gate. They always try to do something a little different, whether that's taking a color shifted strategy or whether that's trying to find a really hackneyed way to be able to reach an established strategy but come at it from a different direction, or just, you know, trying to build a commander that really no one's ever heard of or has ever seen do exactly that. Take an established commander, find a strategy that doesn't exactly fit with exactly what the commander is trying to do, and then try to make that viable. And I can definitely see 2 years ago when I was first getting started here that I was already starting to plant the seeds of that particular way of building. I just didn't really know it yet. And again, Glissa is a really good example of that. I was trying to find a way to be able to utilize her abilities to be able to, you know, keep the board in check. I just didn't know exactly how to do that, but as I kept going and going and going with different strategies, different commanders, decks that no longer exist, obviously, but I really started to find that niche of wanting to do something different, and that has really stuck with me this whole time. Obviously, again, if you've been listening to the show for a long time, you know this, but if you're new to the show or haven't heard this before, is that I love building weird niche decks. I love doing strange things that people have never seen before and are going to remember. I want to create a story when I play a game of Magic. I want people to remember the silly things that I'm doing, because even if I don't win, I want people to remember what exactly I did to at least keep the game interesting. I want to have that story, that note, that footnote to remember that game by, because there's a whole lot of really cool stuff that can just go by in a Commander game. A lot of things you're never going to remember, but I'm trying to be that guy with the deck who you're going to remember, even if the deck doesn't necessarily do the thing, or, you know, even if I don't win, I want to make sure that people know that, you know, I at least showed up to the game, my deck did something interesting, and hopefully they're going to remember it for it. So, yeah, that's really where I've wanted to be the last 2 years, and where I've really developed has been the complexity of a lot of those decks. But also, I've really stuck true to that theme of trying to keep things really weird, trying to keep things a little bit out of the ordinary. I have done a whole lot of these things in the last 2 years, and some of the decks that I've talked about a lot on the show are really the kind of the late stage products of this 2-3 year long process. I mean, I talk about my Kothfed deck all the time. That started out as basically a challenge to the world of people saying that Kothfed is unplayable, and I picked up that mantle, decided to build the deck, and now it's probably my most played EDH deck, and I really enjoy playing that deck because it does have an inherent flaw. But again, it's the fact that I'm willing to go in to a game with that inherent flaw and be willing to deal with the consequences of it that I think really sets me apart from a lot of EDH players. And that's something that definitely needs to be said about a lot of these. I mean, I don't play my colorless Najeela deck a lot anymore, but the fact that I built it demonstrates a willingness to stick to a concept even if the deck isn't necessarily all that great. Want to talk about my old Fogey deck. That's an extreme example of the weirdness that I really put into my building, is I took not just a silver border card, but a silver border non-legendary card and actually built an entire deck around that, including 3 or 4 other silver border cards, that basically the deck really doesn't win, but it does a whole bunch of silly stuff, and hopefully people will remember the time that they played that old Fogey deck. So that's really where I'm trying to get at here, is the last 2 years I have definitely matured as a brewer, I've matured as a player, I've gotten a whole hell of a lot smarter, I've gotten a whole hell of a lot more devious in a way, but I've also learned that I really enjoy playing weird decks. I enjoy playing things that I put together myself, but again, not just because they're quote-unquote strong, but I just enjoy putting together weird decks that people have never seen before. And that is really what I've predicated the podcast on. It's what I've predicated my deck building on. It's what I predicated my gameplay on. And I just really enjoy that. So I have no intention of quitting that anytime soon. I'm going to continue to build decks kind of compulsively for hopefully for a long time and just keep finding new experiences in this weird, wonderful, wacky game that we all seem to share and we all love. So yeah, that is my kind of my 2 year journey here. And now I'm going to switch over to the second half of the episode. That is going to be the decks that I have really enjoyed over the last 2 years and some of the decks that have come and gone over the last 2 years. So I'm going to start off with the decks that I have kind of come and gone as my favorites, but are still kind of in my deck arsenal. So I know last year I talked about having a gameplay log. This is something that Andy Fleury from the Guardian Project podcast inspired me to do at the very end of 2020 when I was talking to him or playing. I think I was playing a game with Andy at that point, and he was talking about playing or having a gameplay log where he was keeping all the results of his games in an Excel sheet. And I thought, hey, you know, that's a really good idea. That's something that I should be doing. So I kept one for 2021 and I've kept one for 2022. But not only have I kept track of the results for all of the games that I've played, but I've also kept a second tab in that Excel sheet called List of Commanders. And this is a list of every commander that I have ever played in a single game of EDH or more. Kind of wanted to see, you know, where exactly I've been in this journey for the last couple of years and where I'm kind of going. And it has a record of every commander, or at least every legendary creature that I've ever played with. And currently that list is at 65 different commanders. Obviously not all of them are, some of them are partners, some of them, and so two partners count as one cell, in this case one deck. So a few of the decks that I've played are not the decks, or not decks that I own. Again, these are ones that I've borrowed, or, you know, For instance, the Commander Legends sealed games, those obviously I'm not going to keep around because those are 60-card sealed decks. They're not supposed to really be meant for full construct play, etc., etc. So when you boil it down to the number of decks that I have built and played myself, we're looking at about 55 to 58 decks that I have personally built and personally played in at least one game. Obviously, some of these decks have only seen one or two games. Other ones have seen 30 or 40 plays. So again, it's kind of a wide range of decks here. And obviously I don't have the number of times that each deck's been played because I only have the gameplay logs going back as far as 2021. But again, it's nice to be able to kind of see where I have been, what I have played, and then just really get a feeling for, you know, what strategies I've tried out, what are some of the weird things I've done, but also just see which decks I've really enjoyed and that I keep around. So some of the favorite decks that I still play right now, obviously Kothafed is on there. I really enjoy Krark Prava. Obviously, if you've listened to my friend Cole, the Uncommon Commanders podcast about Krark Prava, you've heard me talk about how I really enjoy the little Thumbless Goblins deck where it's just, I'm basically dancing on the edge of a razor blade half the time because everything is heavily reliant on the coin flip, but I just really enjoy that deck because it's silly, it's fun, it's not overly powerful. It's just trying to do silly, stupid things. So I enjoy playing that Krark deck as well. Other decks I really enjoy playing that may not really see a huge spotlight here on this podcast, but I really wanted to shout out, include my personal version of Hazoreth the Fervent. I really love this mono-red deck because it allows me to mess around with some interesting mono-red things. I'm allowed to basically throw some fireballs around. Hazoreth has an interesting activated ability for two and a red. I discard a card, and Hazoreth deals two damage to every opponent. But I also really enjoy playing that deck as a chance to try to get Hazoreth in as a blocker. Obviously, a 4/4 indestructible god is really nice to have, but Hazoreth can't attack or block unless I have one or fewer cards in hand. So the goal of the deck is trying to make sure that I'm able to get as close to being hellbent as possible, which obviously means having zero cards in hand, and just trying to make sure that Hazoreth can be used as an attacker and blocker, and then have a whole bunch of equipment in that deck to have to be able to Voltron if I need to be able to, or to be able to throw a whole bunch of fireballs around there. So I really enjoy that Hazoreth deck. Obviously, it doesn't work the best, but again, it's kind of how I take a commander that may seem like a one-note commander and really try to make it multi-dimensional. I want to make sure that if the one thing I'm trying to do doesn't work out, I still have multiple other things I can do with that same commander. So, you know, trying to make sure that there's a lot of flexibility in any given deck has definitely been a hallmark of the way I build and is the way that I'm going to continue to build it into the future. Another deck that I don't really talk about a whole lot, but has some very interesting things going for it, is my Sithis Harvest Hand deck. Sithis is a 1/2 legendary nymph and basically allows me to gain a life and draw a card every time I play an enchantment. So obviously it's an enchantment heavy build. But again, if you saw this gameplay on my friend Neo Royal's channel, the House of Pricey Cardboard, I can basically attest my Sithis deck does run a lot of very strange enchantments. I love the creature enchantments. I love the things that turn into creatures after being enchantments. You know, based on what my opponents are playing, I'm running six of those hidden cards in that particular deck, and I'm trying to make a whole bunch of tokens to be able to swing out. And obviously, the deck isn't the best. It doesn't do the thing every time, but that's okay. I just want to make sure that I'm setting myself up with that deck to have a really good time, draw a lot of cards, gain some life, and hopefully then be able to drop a Storm Herd and be able to, you know, swing in for 60 or something with a whole bunch of Pegasi tokens. So, really interesting deck to play. I don't play it as much as I probably should, but again, it's definitely the kind of deck that, you know, it seems, even though it seems very linear in a way, and it is, it's also not overly linear because I'm not playing a lot of the most popular enchantments out there. Yes, I am playing things like Sterling Grove, but I'm not running Mirari's Wake. I'm running a lot of different enchantments in there. I'm running just a whole bunch of crazy enchantments and some other things that are in there. Not a whole lot of ramp. Obviously, I just wanted to be able to jam in as many enchantments as possible to try to be able to churn through my deck and try to be able to make as many tokens as possible. So, yeah, it's and a whole lot of token producers in there whenever I play enchantments. So, yeah, it's just a really interesting take, an interesting kind of tokeny spin on the Enchantress archetype, and it's a really enjoyable deck to play sometimes anyway. But in a way, a little bit too linear for my taste, I'm not sure. Another kind of under-the-radar deck that I really like talking about, but that doesn't really see a whole lot of play out, you know, in my games, ends up being my Rashmi Eternity's Crafter deck. And if you've ever seen my Mox Field or you've heard me talk about this particular deck, you know, Rashmi is typically really good for Spellslinger-type decks. It's the kind of, you know, table police, quote-unquote, deck in the CDH meta in a lot of cases. Again, shout-out to Cal over at Playing With Power for his Rashmi build for basically allowing me to say this. But yeah, my Rashmi deck was effectively a chance for me to try to create Simic Stompy. I really like big, dumb creatures, and this particular version of Rashmi allows me to be able to get a whole lot of mana out really quickly, and then be able to drop a whole bunch of giant sea creatures and big green creatures like Avenger of Zendikar to be able to try to get a whole lot of value. And using Rashmi's ability, the idea is to hopefully be able to drop other large creatures off of Rashmi triggers on my turn or on someone else's turn. So I like being able to play at instant speed. I have the Leyline of Anticipation in there. I have ways to be able to play at instant speed. And just to try to make sure that I can get as much value on the board as quickly as possible, and then be able to overwhelm my opponents with giant beater creatures. And that's why I really enjoy that particular deck, is it doesn't always work. Obviously, a Rashmi deck that's really low to the ground, running a lot of counter spells, running a lot of really cheap spells on your opponent's turn, that's really good stuff. And I know it's very, quote-unquote, powerful. But I really like my Rashmi deck, personally, because it does take the same commander, but also finds a very interesting and different way to try to be able to take a spin on it, while also allowing me to play a whole bunch of beater creatures. And I just love being able to do that in a shell that hopefully allows me to cheat out a few nice little things as well. And having some top deck manipulation in there also really helps. That's where you'll find my scroll rack as well as my copy of Miri's Guile. So, yeah, two cards that are extremely powerful that work really well in that deck, and I'm really glad I have that deck. Obviously, I'm still working on it and need to kind of find exactly where I want it to be, but it's been kind of in the right place for a long time, and I do enjoy playing that deck. Another deck that I really enjoy talking about, and something that I haven't, and one I really haven't talked about a lot lately on the podcast here, is my Selenia Dark Angel deck. And again, if you listened to my episode with Coach J-Ro about 2 years ago, talking about his version of Selenia and my version of Selenia, as well as when I was talking to DJ Johnson over at Card Garden about his own Selenia deck, I find that, again, I can take a commander that not really a lot of people have ever heard of, and then be able to do something completely different than what other people are doing. So J-Ro's version of this, he's trying to lose as much life as quickly as possible and then be able to swap life totals with his opponents. What I'm trying to do is be able to utilize Selenia's trigger to return her to my hand to be able to help myself lose life in certain situations, to be able to activate certain abilities, et cetera, but also to make sure that I have a commander in my hand at any given time that I can use as a blocker, as an attacker, et cetera, et cetera. I really enjoy Selenia's ability being able to give me some sort of card advantage so that I'll always have access to my commander in my hand. But also, it's a kind of a life gain and life loss deck. I have some life gain payoffs, I have some life loss payoffs, and it's just a really funky deck for Orzhov good stuff. I really enjoy it. I don't play it as much as I used to because sometimes the CMC really kills me, but when that deck gets going, it really works very hard, and it's very enjoyable to play. So yeah, that's a very inconsistent deck, I would say. It's just the high CMC of the cards really makes it difficult for it to run all the time, especially if I draw like crap at the beginning of the game. But again, I really enjoy the deck because I enjoy the cards that are in there. I enjoy some of the funky cards that are in there. I have a couple cards with Clash in there where I just love the randomness of those. And I just enjoy the deck because it does some cool Orzhov things, but it doesn't necessarily do them in the most optimal way, and that's what I really enjoy about it. Now, as far as decks that have kind of come and gone here, there have been a lot of them. I have run through a lot of decks that, you know, for one reason or another, I put them together with the best of intentions, and then I ended up tearing them apart. And obviously this happens when you're trying to find your niche as a brewer, and it's going to happen even to the most experienced brewers out there. And I wanted to talk for a couple of minutes about some of the decks that I have run through over the last couple of years that no longer exist but do merit a shout-out. So obviously I'm going to give another shout-out to Glissa the Trader here. I still want to someday be able to build her in the best way that I can, in do Golgari, do artifacts, whatever it is. I want to make sure that I can finally do that deck right. And I haven't quite gotten there yet. I have tried a couple of times, but I've never quite found that deck that has that it factor for me. So maybe someday I'll finally be able to give Glissa another chance, and we'll see where that goes. Definitely one of the weirdest commanders I've ever built actually was Lord of Tressorhorn. And Lord of Tressorhorn's a very interesting card because ends up being a 10-4 with some very interesting abilities. 10-4 costing one blue, a black, and a red for a legendary zombie. And reads, when Lord of Tressorhorn comes into play, you lose 2 life and sacrifice 2 creatures, and an opponent draws 2 cards, and has an activated ability of pay a black to regenerate Lord of Tressorhorn. And this is a really interesting commander. I think I got this in a box of chaff from someone else a couple years ago, and I wasn't really sure what to do with it, but I really enjoyed the fact it was a 10-4 with a ridiculous downside. I love these kinds of cards because they force you to really have to think when you're trying to build. And I only played this deck once in a 1v1 game against my friend Ryan, who used to be my co-host on the Control Room series that we haven't done for a long time. But anyway, yeah, ended up playing a one-on-one game with this. It didn't work out that well because, again, the hardest part was actually having 2 creatures to sacrifice, obviously. That's going to be the biggest challenge. Because otherwise, you know, paying 2 life, allowing your opponent to draw 2 cards, that's not a big deal, I think, in a social game of Commander. But having to sacrifice 2 other creatures, that's difficult. And, yeah, it was a very funky, funky deck. I mean, I don't even really remember half the stuff I was running in there. But it was just trying to find some token creatures and get Lord of Tressorhorn out there and then be able to do some things. Ryan kept blowing the Lord up, and yeah, the deck did not work very well, and I scrapped it right afterwards. So that was definitely the weirdest deck that I've ever worked with. But again, I think it bears mentioning just the fact that, you know, I did give this strange card from Alliances a try. I really did give it a try. Didn't work out, but, you know, there's a whole lot of other commanders on this list that also didn't work out. So, you know, I gave it a try. I'm happy. And again, everything kind of stemmed into how I build now. Maybe if I was to try to build Lord of Tressorhorn now, I would do it very differently. I probably easily could build it. So we'll see what happens. Another deck that I have gone through and finally ditched was my Savric Golgari Queen deck. Obviously, right at the very beginning of the COVID era, I built Savra because I wanted a very strong Golgari sacrifice deck. And over time, I realized Savra had a serious problem, was that I just didn't have enough ways to be able to win the game with that deck. I was able to sacrifice a whole lot of creatures, but I didn't have a way to close out that particular game outside of, you know, maybe attacking with a few tokens. But yeah, that deck had the right idea. It had some very strong sacrifice synergies. I had the Dictate of Erebos in there. I was able to keep boards clear, but I just wasn't able to finish off games. And that's the reason why that one ultimately got dumpstered, was that I just kind of kept hitting this. The deck was very linear, and every time I played it, I got to the same point where the deck just couldn't finish the game. So I ended up tearing that one apart because I found myself not playing it, but mostly because it felt very linear. The deck did the same thing every time, and I ultimately didn't feel like I wanted that to be the case. I think that was really kind of the poster child for when I really started to realize the variance was really what I wanted out of my more casual EDH decks. And Savra, unfortunately, was kind of the deck that helped me figure out that I wanted to go off. Instead of trying to make my decks more optimal, I instead decided to go the opposite direction and start making weirder, niche, more casual Battlecruiser decks. So Savra was, unfortunately, the casualty out of that. But I think, really, the lesson to be learned here was that I found decks that worked better for me as a result of tearing that particular deck apart. Same thing goes for my Queen Marchesa deck. That used to be a Mardu Aristocrats deck. I was really happy to have that deck. But again, it would kind of do the same thing every time and really didn't scratch the itch of consistent deck, but also doing the things that I want to be doing that deck. So I think really those two, which were together when I first started this podcast, but I tore apart very shortly thereafter. There was a good reason for those, is I just started to realize that they didn't scratch that itch of what I wanted to do in a game, and ultimately they got cut for that reason. So, rip to those two decks. It's hard to believe that those were two of my best decks back in the day, but I certainly build decks a whole hell of a lot better now, or at least in a more enjoyable manner now. And I'm definitely reaping the benefits of that. Another deck that I wanted to shout out here really quickly was my Palladium Moors deck, which I built for that white-bordered EDH deck-building game I had with good friends Coach J-Row, Peter, a.k.a. Mono Whiteboarder, and Tyler, the almighty Brushwag. Ended up playing a single game where we all had white-bordered decks out there back in April of 2021. I ended up winning that game, obviously, with my weird 9 enchantments list. But that really doesn't matter. We all had a lot of fun, but it was also the only time I've ever played that deck. So I don't think that deck will ever see the light of day again, but the fact that I got to play one time was very fun. Maybe someday we'll be able to get another white border game together. I don't know. But again, I know you're listening out there, Peter. I know, J-Row, you're listening out there. Definitely think about trying to do that again sometime, because that was a lot of fun. We should definitely do it again. Another deck that, I've done a lot of interesting little theme decks for streams. Again, so I wanted to quickly shout out my Drevi Imperial Tactician Angel Tribal deck that I played for one of Coach J-Row's Angel Tribal games for suicide prevention. I believe it was last year. Deck didn't do very well, but, again, I was just trying a weird proof of concept. Also want to shout out my Taste of Karlov deck that I did play over on... Carlos's stream with it wasn't Monarch. I'm really blanking on this one. But anyway, ended up playing Halloween 2021 with Taste of Karlov, trying to do spirits for a Halloween themed game. Ooh. That was really fun. So again, the deck didn't necessarily do the best, but whatever. It's EDH. We're having fun, right? And yeah, another one of the weirdest decks that I ever built was my Olivia Voldaren deck. Obviously, I didn't play that a whole lot on stream, if ever, but it was a really funky deck because instead of trying to be able to build the Vampire Tribal or build that to try to steal my opponent's creatures, I was trying to utilize Olivia's first ability, the one in a red, to be able to ping a creature and be able to put a +1/+1 counter on Olivia to be able to kind of weirdly Voltron her throughout the game. And be able to make her larger, and then try to use a variety of fling effects to literally fling my commander at my opponents. Now, the deck did not work all that well, But the concept was funky as heck, and I really enjoyed that. I was running cards like Braid of Fire and Thran Turbine in there to try to be able to generate some mana during my upkeep that then I could just pour into Olivia and then be able to hopefully try to fling her at my opponents. And I had a whole bunch of other really large creatures in that deck, like Yargle, that the idea was to be able to chuck them at my opponents whenever I needed to do massive damage. Now, I don't have the deck together anymore. It was really bad, really inconsistent. But again, just the concept was there. It was funny for a while. And I still really enjoy the silliness of that particular deck. Also because Yargle was in there, and who doesn't love Yargle? Anyway, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to listen to my two-year kind of reminiscing episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. I really enjoy talking about the lessons that I've learned over the last couple of years and some of the decks that have come and gone in the last 2 years, and as well as the decks that have really come to define my podcast after these first 2 years. I can't believe that I've released almost 200 episodes. If you told me that I would still be doing this 2 years later, you know, when I first started back in June of 2020, I don't know if I believe you. I was just trying to get started. I was just a guy with a microphone and a dream. And 2 years later, you know, not only have I met a whole lot of amazing people through this whole experience, but I've also, one, been able to share my thoughts on EDH and Magic in general. Two, I started cosplaying, which was really interesting. And three, I was an invited content creator to DreamHack Dallas earlier this month. So just a lot of really cool things have happened because of this podcast. But yeah, I've gotten into CDH as well. And just learned a whole lot about the game, learned a whole lot about who I am as a brewer, and definitely gotten some amazing ideas. I want to give a huge shout-out to friend Peter, aka Mono Whiteboarder, for helping me come up with the idea for my Najeela deck. You know, that's something that I wouldn't have built on my own, but Peter gave me the idea, I ultimately built it, and it's hilarious, and I still have that deck together to this day. So thank you so much to everybody out there listening. I couldn't do this without you. Your support really, really makes a difference. Last 2 years have been very tough mentally sometimes, and it's really nice to know that there are people out there who really enjoy what I have to say on EDH and Magic in general, and are listening to every episode that I release, or even if you don't listen to every episode, just as long as you support me by listening to the episodes, by interacting with me on Twitter, just it's whatever, everything helps. I really appreciate it, and thank you so much, and I look forward to continuing to do this to the third, fourth, maybe even fifth year. So, yeah. Again, my name's MJ, and this has been the two-year episode. Hopefully there are better things ahead, so let's look forward to those, and rock on. I'd like to utilize this opportunity again to give another huge shout-out, and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/mtgquarantine. So another huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Nick S., Infamous Bridge, Frugal Brutal, Jenna the Filthy MTG Casuals, Coach J-Ro, Geek Beardly, and Scoop Faze for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.